Good morning and welcome to Awakened Talks. Welcome back. Happy Sunday morning if you're joining in from India or other Eastern countries, and good evening if you're joining in from the West. Whether it's a Sunday morning or Saturday night, it just sounds like a time when you all could be doing so many other things instead. So thank you all for joining this call and sharing very generously with all of us through the priceless gift of your listening. My name is Rohit, and I am your host for today's Awakened Talk, a space where we hold conversations with individuals whose inner journeys inspire us and whose work is transforming our world in large and small ways. Awakened Talks is an all-volunteer-run offering of Service Space, a global platform founded on the simple principle that by changing ourselves, we change the world. Thank you for joining us. I request that we start our call with a minute of silence to allow our minds to step out from wherever we were before this into the beauty and possibility which mindfulness of the present moment invariably brings in. Just a few moments of silence, please. Thank you. Thank you. And now I would like to invite Anu, who is a finance services professional and now turned a gardener, and also a mother to a two-year-old, a nature, and more specifically, a butterfly lover, to open our call today with a small offering of a prayer to mark the spirit of the lives which our two very guests, Amit and Archana, have lived for a very, very long time now. Anu has spent a couple of years as a rural community of Nav Darshanam before now settling back in Mumbai. And she has been a volunteer with Service Space community since a long time. And she carries the spirit of service and love wherever she goes. So thanks a lot, Anu, for showing up for this beautiful offering. And over to you.
गगन में थाल रव चंद दीपक बने तारका मंडल जनक मोती धूप मले आन लो पवन चवरो करे सगल बन राय फुलंत ज्योति कैसी आरती होए पवखंड ना तेरी आरती अनहता शब्द भजंत पेरी सहस तव नैन नन नैन है तोही सहस तव नैन नन नैन है तोही सहस मूरत मना एक तोही सहस पद विमल रंग एक पद गंध बिन सहस पद विमल रंग एक पद गंध बिन सहस तव गंध इव चलत मोही कैसी आरती होए पवखंड ना तेरी आरती अनहता शब्द बजंत पेरी सब में ज्योत ज्योत है सोई सब में ज्योत ज्योत है सोई सब में तिसके चानन सब में चानन होई गुर साखी ज्योत परगट होए गुर साखी ज्योत परगट होए ज्योत इस पावे सो आरती होए कैसी आरती होए कैसी आरती होए भव खंड ना तेरी आरती अनह हता शब्द पजंत पेरी कैसी आरती होए कैसी आरती होए अवखंड ना तेरी अवखंड ना तेरी भव खंड ना तेरी
Thank you, Anu, for that beautiful offering, which it's such a powerful reminder that to seek divinity, one need not go to the temple or a place of worship, but one's whole life is an opportunity, one's whole existence, this whole world around us is an opportunity to make that offering to the divine, to recognize the divine which is within us and in everyone around us, in all life around us. And in many ways, we have two very special guests today, which I am very honored and privileged to have with us today. And for last many, many years, I think 20 years or more, a lot of what they have done in life has, I think, embodied that spirit. So welcome, Amit and Archana. But before I could just go on and sort of get lost in just sharing why and how I and so many others are inspired by you in such deep and profound ways, I would like to take a moment to introduce my co-host today, who is Sangeeta. Welcome, Sangeeta. And Sangeeta herself, her life is no less than a beautiful inspiration herself. She has had a long career as a journalist and then in digital marketing before she took the plunge to immerse herself more deeply in working for the community. She has held leadership roles in Tata Sons, in India Leaders for Social Sector, and was a co-founder at IDR. But in the last 6 months since lockdown, what has been incredibly inspiring as I heard her story in the last few days is despite having held roles with large-scale impact, in last few months, Sangeeta has been completely immersed in taking care of her mother, who is suffering from dementia, and also using her hands to be active on the ground and supporting the various underprivileged communities like migrant laborers and others as a volunteer with Goonj. So welcome, Sangeeta, and very grateful to you for joining us for to interview Amit and Archana at this short notice. And now I can move over to sharing a bit more about Amit and Archana. And I feel that there is a story which if anyone who is interested in philanthropy, in using their money, time, or any other gifts or skills which they possess for society's benefit, they ought to hear Amit and Archana's story. I think we all have heard of people like Bill and Melinda Gates and their giving, which is great. But I personally feel that Amit and Archana's life has completely redefined the standards of philanthropy, the levels of philanthropy, especially if you are from India, especially if you belong to the well-educated sections of the society. As early as his mid-30s, Amit had started heading what was then the largest investment bank in India, DSP Merrill Lynch. Which if I were to pass down in layman terms means that he was one of the most social corporate leaders in India in his mid-30s. But when his career was just started peaking, when he was really looking forward to so many further years of peak career of name, fame, fortune and everything, he made a very counterculture choice at that time that he wanted to make more space in his life for contributing to the society through his money, through his time, and so many other ways. And what started as small steps at that moment, today has compounded into giving almost 90% of their income to various causes and more than half of and half of his time. And I think Archana's journey has been the less public one, but equally, if not more inspiring in many ways. She has been a silent force in all these life-changing and life-affirming choices which they have made together. She has, her early career was in marketing, PR and HR roles at Bennett and Coleman, Informix, and the Akanksha Foundation. But soon she moved full-time into social work and presently serves as board member and CEO of Jai Vakil Foundation, which is one of the largest NGOs serving those impacted by children impacted by mental challenges. She is also a trustee of SRCC, which is building the largest hospital dedicated to children in the country. And as I said, that through last 20 years or perhaps more, they have been visibly, invisibly, in all forms, supporting various causes across India. They have worked very deeply in education, in health, and more recently supporting innovative breakthrough NGOs of the country, in which many funders are not sort of typically ready to contribute, that is for capacity building. And their work also has been pivotal in making many, many villages of Maharashtra now completely drought free. And having had the opportunity to engage with Amit personally when I was at Give India, and he was the board chairman, I feel very lucky to be able to get some glimpses at him as a person also, beyond the leader Amit, beyond the public persona Amit, which one typically gets to read in the news. I know that they have been vocal in the last few years about their giving, but seeing him personally, I know it's not because that they care for name or fame, but more they want to see the new story of what richness means, what success means, and also encourage and support many others in their giving journey. And I know I'm taking a lot of time, but just one final small incident I would like to share. Amit, it's a very small thing which happened when I was at Give. So I'm sure like you don't remember it, or you didn't even perhaps notice it. But we had a board meeting in our Bangalore office. So we typically do board meetings in Mumbai, but this was the first time we're doing it in Bangalore office. So all the directors are flying in, and you made room to actually fly in a few hours earlier, just so that you can spend time and meet all the team members. And I think the meeting was in the evening, and you had landed there to our office by 3 or 4 p.m. So it was quite late, but you hadn't had lunch. And so we got the chance to offer you whatever sort of little bit leftover food which we used to have in office. I think, I'm not really sure, but I think, you know, like we just cook simple rice and sambar and some curry. I think, I'm not sure, maybe the curry had also finished. So it was perhaps cold rice and sambar we offered to you. But I think it was just really one of those moments where to see you accepting that also with such grace and gratitude, it was, I think, a really telling lesson of the simplicity and the spirit of gratitude which you lead your lives. And personally, it was one of the high moments for me, you know, one of the most memorable moments for me in my time at Give India. So thank you. And without taking any more time now, I would hand it over to Sangeeta to, you know, lead us with some very interesting questions, which we are all eager to hear from.
Thank you, Rohit, for that very kind introduction. Really pales in significance in front of what Amit and Archana are doing and what we will discuss and discover during this conversation. Thank you also to you and to Service Space for giving me this opportunity. This is a space that sustains and nurtures so many of us. So it's really a pleasure to be here with you to co-moderate this session. Particularly delighted to be talking to Amit and Archana today because, I mean, these are two wonderful people whose journeys we've been following with a lot of interest and inspiration. In recent years, especially. And I've had a few opportunities to interact with both Amit and Archana. And I can't recall one interaction where I've come back not feeling touched by their, you know, just the humility and the candidness and just their ability to speak to every individual as an equal partner in the work they do. So thank you, Amit. Thank you, Archana, for making the time on a Sunday morning to be with us. We're really looking forward to this conversation today. I have to especially recall one visit to Jai Vakil last year. I think that's been one of the most memorable visits I've made to an NGO. We spent a few hours exploring the space, exploring Jai Vakil, meeting the children, the staff, and watching Archana and at work, and it was special. And that's a spot of sunshine I carry with me even now. So it was beautiful. Thank you for that experience. And yeah, so without let me not prolong this introduction. Let's just get straight into the conversation today. I'd like to read out, with your permission, a few lines from a letter that Amit wrote to your daughter about 10 years ago in this book called Legacy. And I thought that would be a good way to kind of preface today's discussion. And he writes to Anika here. She must have been 6 or 7 then, I think. And he writes, "If there is one thing that will truly distinguish you, it will be compassion. As you grow, you will begin to appreciate how important a quality this is, given the opportunity to spread happiness to those you know and the many others you do not in this very unequal world we live in." So I think with that, we can just get into probably the first question that I'd like each of you to kind of respond to, is just, you know, each of our lives, we have a turning point or those experiences or moments that kind of change the course of life or influence those decisions, those choices that we make and the paths that we choose. So I would really like to hear, all of us would like to hear what those pivotal turning points were for each of you individually and of course as a couple.
Thank you so much to Service Space, Sangeeta, to you, Rohit, for inviting us here today. It's a privilege to be on this platform. I must say both of us have approached this conversation with both a mix of excitement and some trepidation, because this isn't the normal sort of platform that one comes and engages with. This is a very different kind of a platform. You know, our journey has, there has been a linear component to our journey. You know, as Rohit mentioned in his introduction, we did start, we did start giving very early on in our lives. And that was, I think, because of the DNA that the values that were seeded in us very early on. So virtually from the time that we got married, we were staying even at that point of time in a paying guest accommodation, we started giving. So we had very little, but we were clear that that had to be shared because of what we were blessed with and what shaped us. And I think we kept doing more and more of that as we went along. But there were certainly some inflection points that resulted in that the shape of that graph changing. I think there were influences in our life, be it living people, be it teachings, gurus, and I think incidents, and there were different things in each of our lives that shaped us, and of course dialogues that we had with each other that then converged to result in the philosophy that we equally share at this point of time. I would say in my case, probably there was definitely, going back to again Rohit's introduction, success came early to me. I was very blessed that success came early to me. I was running the country's largest investment bank at my 30s and virtually had achieved all my career goals and, you know, by then, but I didn't feel satisfied with that success. It caused a sense of emptiness, and my boss and mentor, Himendra Kothari, when I consulted him, thought it was male menopause that hit me too early. And, you know, to get answers to the emptiness that I felt, I actually went to do Vipassana. I took a sabbatical and I went and did Vipassana. I was terrible at meditation. I didn't learn the technique, the
teacher called my brain, characterized my brain as a monkey brain. But I must say it was one of the most transformative experiences I had in my life, because it was the first time I spent time with myself. And it helped me answer a lot of questions, because I was able to still my mind. And it was very helpful because I was able to answer a lot of questions about what the purpose of my life is, how I would like to use my time, whatever wealth we were able to create with more purpose. And I came out of that with a sense of purpose. And that was, I think, one very big inflection point for me personally. The other was when I started reading more of Guru Nanak. And I started understanding his journey, and I'm very grateful to Anuji for sharing that beautiful Shabad with us. I would just share anecdotally that the great actor Balraj Sahni once asked Gurudev Rabindranath Tagore, "You've written the national anthem for this country. Would you care to write an international anthem for the world?" And he said, he said the international anthem for the world was actually written over 500 years ago. And he pointed him to Gagan Mein Thal, the Shabad that Anuji just sang. So actually, when I read more and more of Guru Nanak's teachings, more as a philosopher and as a social reformer than from a religious perspective, it made just a lot of sense for me. It made me think again about the purpose of one's life. And there's one particular teaching of his which struck me a lot, which is Kirat Kar Vanchak, which is the purpose of one's life, a tenet should be to work hard and share generously. And it helped me define a lot of what I am today. And then I would say the third inflection point for me was when my friend Abhay Avaldar, who used to run a company called the General Atlantic Partners in India, sent me actually a book on the life of a remarkable man called Chuck Feeney, called The Billionaire Who Wasn't. And he was a man who went on to inspire Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, many, many others, very silently, by giving away 99% of his wealth. Which is equivalent of $8 billion. And then I read about his life, and then Archana read it, and we just felt just incredible that there were people like that who existed, who did that. And often we see a movie, we read a book, we hear a story, and we feel inspired, and we ask ourselves that why can't we actually do things differently? Why just simply be, motivated for a day or 2 days? And so I think we decided, based on all these things, we actually try to shape our life differently. We try to push ourselves. We use these to change the linear graph, the line that we were on, to both use our time and our money differently, to change ourselves. And I think that's been the journey that we've been on.
Beautiful. Archana, would like to hear you.
So mine was, I think, thank you, Rohit. Thank you, Sangeeta, for, I think, your exceedingly warm and kind introduction. We'll try to kind of share our journey, and take what you will off it. But I think for me, life was honestly very, very comfortable. I have been born and brought up in Mumbai and gone to school, college in a fairly comfortable fashion. I got married when I was really young. I was married at 22 and, had a job at that time with the Times of India Group and then another one with Informix, which was a US-based company. So in all manners of speaking, my life looked, you know, like it was heading in a particular trajectory, and it was very comfortable. And then a series of events happened in 2001, which actually made me question this trajectory that my life was on. So the first thing that happened was Informix, the company that I was working with, got bought over in the US, and they wound down their India operations. So for no fault of mine, overnight, I had no job. My dad was diagnosed with cancer, and we lost him within a month. I'm an only child and was very, very close to him. Immediately after this, we had two miscarriages back to back, right? We then went on to become pregnant for the third time, and I delivered a stillborn baby. So I think physically, emotionally, and mentally, those were probably, you know, the lowest point in my life. And I started really questioning this, why me? What is the purpose of my life? Why is this happening to me, et cetera, right? And I think it was at this point that, of course, you know, Amit and family and friends were lovely and they kind of held us together and helped us through this. But it was at this point that I actually found my guru, Master Chua Kok Sui, and my spiritual school, which is Pranic Healing. And that kind of, you know, was like my, it ground me internally, as well as helped me understand that there is a bigger purpose to my life than my individual life that I lead, right? It was also at this time that through the school, my understanding of the law of karma became a little bit better, right? So, I mean, we all understand the law of karma, right? We kind of grew up with that, especially if you're from India, which is, as you sow, so shall you reap, jaisi karni, vaisi bharni, etc. But my understanding of this law went from it being fatalistic to it being more dynamic, right? And I understood that the lords of karma are actually very compassionate beings. They're not here to punish us, right? Which is what sometimes our life events look like. And in my head, I'm thinking, how can something that feels like a punishment not be a punishment? And it be like an opportunity to learn, grow, and evolve. And then I kind of related that to being a parent, right? Sometimes when our children are young and they don't know better and they misbehave, we do tend to discipline them and or even punish them. But that punishment is actually coming from a place of genuine love and caring and desire for them to be the best version of themselves, right? So I understood that the law of karma is very similar, right? So a couple of things I learned about the law of karma at that time. And the first one was that whatever I am going through in life today, I have sown the seeds in the past, right? The objective of this incident is for me to learn, grow, and evolve. If I am facing any difficulties today, I have as a soul chosen to go through it. It is not a random act. And the last one is that if you are going through somebody, going through something difficult, the lords of karma do believe and have the faith that you will be able to go through them and learn, grow, and evolve, right? So the minute this understanding came through for me, it was a huge mindset change. And with that, you know, that whole thing in your head where you're victimizing yourself, that lens kind of moved to say that, you know, okay, there is a reason and there is a lesson. Right? The level of understanding, you know, really, really helped me kind of heal. And we went on to have a fourth pregnancy, thanks to which today we have the joy and happiness in our lives. It was also around this time, Sangeeta, that I visited Jaivakil Foundation, mm-hmm. a space and a cause that I actually nothing about before then, but today is a space that is so, so dear to me.
Yes, and I know I saw how much you love that place and how much of a baby it is to you. When I visited Devaki, it's actually beautiful the way you said it, right? When there is a tendency when we talk about karma to, I mean, you can either just leave things as they are and accept things the way they are. We forget that we do have agency. We do have the choice to make powerful choices at certain points in our life. So thanks for sharing that. And if you could also speak a little bit about just the journey since then, you had these, you discovered purpose in a sense. And I remember reading in that letter that Amit has written that he wishes for her to have a life of giving. And that's a beautiful wish for a parent to have for their child, right? And and as a path to happiness. So giving and the relationship between giving and happiness is so much a part of everything that you always speak about and that all the work you do. I was just wondering if along the way, since you had those, you made those decisions, you made those choices in life about your work and your purpose of your work, what are some of the ways in which your approach to giving has changed, evolved? Have you found yourself questioning and changing the way you approach this whole act of giving and, of course, the act of receiving and, of course, your relationship with the impact that you finally see on the ground? So I'd be curious to understand that.
So, Sangeeta, like I said, before I got to Jai Vakil, I knew nothing about the space. In fact, it was at a social event that a really dear friend of mine said, Archana, you have to come and see Jai Vakil. It's lovely and all the children. And I said, what does it do? And she said, all the children are intellectually challenged. And she went on to explain the activities. And I have to admit, Sangeeta, in my head, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to interact with them? What am I even going to say to them? So I was very hesitant and nervous to even go there. Nevertheless, I landed on the campus one morning. I met these wonderful, wonderful kids with the most warm and beautiful smiles. And it was like the energy, the positive energy, the happiness quotient was just, it just hits you in the face. And you say, all of this, despite what I think are their difficulties, right? So that's how my heart was engaged. It was also at this time that I really understood what is intellectual disability, right? And I realized that it is an IQ-based condition. So if all of us have 100 IQ as the normal, all my kids here had an IQ of 70 and below, which means their ability to comprehend was less, right? But in spite of that, you don't see them anywhere. It's almost like they're hidden, right? So I understood that intellectual disability is an IQ-based condition. IQ cannot be changed by either surgery or medication. It is a whole spectrum disorder. So you have people who are on, at 70 IQ, but you also have kids who are at 20 and below. And the third thing that I understood was that because your brain is affected, very often other disabilities are also there, in terms of challenges for the child. I then went back and said, why have I never seen these people? What does data even look like for them? So I realized that 2% of our population have intellectual disabilities. And I was like, "Do taka to theek hai, right?" But hey, when you translate that into a simplified version, it means 1 in 50. 1 in 50, and I could not remember the last time I had seen a person like this in the theater, in the malls, or in any of the public spaces I go to, right? It's like they were hidden, they were invisible. That's how my head got engaged. So with my head and my heart being engaged, honestly, the place and the cause made my heart sing. And I said, if I have to spend my time and resources somewhere, I'm happy to do it in a space that I think so, so needs the spotlight. So that's how I stayed. It's been over 10 years now. And one of the things, Sangeeta, is that, you know, sometimes I often joke that I don't think I found Jai Vakil. I think it would be more to say that the space found me, especially at that time, in terms of where I was in my life, and anchored me and gave me that sense of purpose. But I think in terms of how that journey has evolved, and I'm talking right now more from the space at Jai Vakil, is that, you know, we went from a lens of care for the child, jitna kiya, acha kiya, bhala kiya, to what does this mean for my child? This means inclusion, right? And if it means inclusion in society, then I have to measure myself. I have to show impact, whether it's hard, whether it's difficult, whether somebody's done it before or not, it cannot be anecdotal. I have to, or we have to hold ourselves to the highest standards possible, and we have to show impact. So it's not just about activities, and it's not just about doing good and feeling good. It's about actually having a measurable impact, hold ourselves accountable.
True. You also bring a beautiful point about the head-heart dichotomy, we'll come to that later, because we'd really like to hear both of you speak about that as well. Amit?
Yeah, so Sangeeta, this journey of, you know, figuring out what works, what doesn't work, I think it has been a very evolutionary journey. And I think we are still learning, and I think we are learning at a very rapid rate. You know, at least personally speaking, I say this to people very openly, and people who work closely with me know this. I'm not a visionary who kind of approaches things with knowing what the right answer is. A lot of people have very good, you know, clarity of what the world will look like, what the right answer is 10 years from now. I approach things with kind of, you know, trying a lot of things, figuring out what works, what doesn't work, and then doubling down on what's working, cutting out what doesn't work. That's my approach to problem solving. And so, a lot of things that I had notions for have been dispelled for the years. I had lots of wrong notions. And I think, so if I look at over the last, you know, 15 plus years that I've been engaged, maybe 20 years that I've been engaged with the social sector somewhat deeply, I think a lot of things, I've evolved my thinking on a lot of dimensions. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of notions that I have today also are, it'll get dispelled, and I'll keep forming my point of view over the years. I mean, for example, I'm much more clear today that the state, that problems that exist despite the fact that we have abundance in society. It's not because of lack of resources. I think a lot of problems can be solved through a combination of volunteering and, you know, with frugal reallocation of resources. I am much more clear that we don't need necessarily the resources of the rich to solve many of our problems. You know, it's actually when the power of a lot of you know, people in the next strata of society and below coming together can actually solve many of the world's problems. I also believe that, unlike how I did before, I was far more naive, that many of these problems simply exist because of the lack of opportunity. And it's the denial of opportunity which causes deprivity in society. And if we actually simply provide opportunity to people, we can actually set right a lot of problems. I also believe, which a lot of people in the social sector don't like to hear, that you do need to combine head and heart a lot more actively that the social sector had actually suffered because of leaning too much towards the hard. And that if we really want to rigorously solve problems that we find surrounding us, that we will need a much, much more rigorous approach which combines the head and heart, what you know we call fact measurement. We will need to look at some of the things, not all of the things, which have resulted in building organizations in an area that the social sector detests, which is the for-profit sector. And so while there's a lot wrong from the for-profit sector, but there's a lot right actually scale. And so there's some things that we'll have to look at very carefully, and we'll have to imbibe some of those things to address some of the problems that inflict us. And so, it is a journey, and we are learning on a continuous basis. I think and of course for me, one of the most the biggest things in all of this journey is not just changing my own thinking, but changing myself, and that journey keeps going.
And it's always work in progress, isn't it? This journey and learning and just continuously reinventing how we approach things. Rohit, over to you. I know you're burning to ask some questions.
Thank you. Beautiful. And I think Amit, just if I were to pick a little more on something which you said last, that this whole process has also been a journey of unlearning, also been a journey of realizing that we need to change ourselves. Because like if I were to read in the newspapers, if I were to read your journeys on the newspapers, it would seem to me that, oh, these are people who have cracked everything. These guys really have figured out what life is about, what the purpose of life is, what meaning of life is, and how to execute. Because if I were to sort of see like an ideal life, you guys are checking all the boxes, but it's quite it's quite strange and not common if I hear you say that you guys are still working, you are still changing. And I'm curious that what are some ways in which these changes have come in your life over the last 15, 20 years? Like what is the difference between Amit and Archana of 15 years ago and today perhaps? I know it's not like a soundbite thing, but maybe you can share about yourself or maybe like we did in a past call, Archana could share with, what changes she has seen in you and vice versa. Anything and on the past, and what do you think right now? Where are you on that, on your inquiry right now? What's a question or a personal aspiration or longing for change which is currently still alive in each of you?
My God. I think there's a Prakriti part of us which hasn't changed. We're both, I think, the same base individuals that we were when we first met each other a little over 26 years ago. I think there are some aspects which probably may have evolved on some dimensions. But I would say the 80% of us is, my sense, is probably similar. I think both of us, and maybe that's a function of age, the function of experience, I think are probably a little bit more, probably a little or lot, this question of definition, more reflective, tend to, think about things a lot more. Certainly, I think with all of that, one, you also mellow down a little bit in some ways. I used to, when I was younger, I used to be more short-tempered. I now people tell me I never lose my cool. So maybe that on that dimension I've changed as an individual. But I would say on otherwise, she would be a better judge of my character than me. Maybe she can comment on how I've changed. I think she's spiritual aspect of her has been a very different aspect of hers and mine, I think, in the first 13 years of our marriage relative to the last 13 years. So that's a completely different dimension, last 13 years versus the first 13. Mm. But otherwise, I don't know.
You're really putting us on the spot, huh, Rohit? So I think Amit is absolutely right that inherently, you know, the who we are and how we're wired has remained the same. But the interesting thing is that both of us are very differently wired from each other, right? And very often both of us will come to the same situation with completely different lenses. I mean, I can give you hundreds of examples of these, right? Including having conversations like these. So Amit has always, because he himself has been influenced by other people's stories and the book Chuck Feeney's that he mentioned. So he was of the view that it's okay to talk about our journey and to share our journey. And if it can help somebody else, why not? Whereas I grew up with my grandmother saying, "Ke neki kar aur kuye mein dal," which basically meant you don't have to talk about it, right? So when Amit started talking about this journey, and I was like, why are you doing this? You know, people will misunderstand. They will think, you know, you're trying to show I'm changing the world kind of a thing. And he very gently and patiently kept repeating his perspective, right? Till I have succumbed and I'm here on the show today.
Right? He hasn't succumbed to anything, for the record.
So I think what has happened to us over 27 years is that we've managed to get both of us to see each other's version of view and adapt in a way that makes both of us, I think, better versions of ourselves, right? So the conversations have been pushy, and I think I have been thrown out of my comfort zone. I cannot even tell you how many times. But when I look back, I can see that each difficulty or being thrown out of my comfort zone repeatedly has done so much for me in terms of both all physical, mental, emotional growth, as well as well-being.
Beautiful. Thank you. And one of the more, you know, one more thing which as we see your life, which has stood out for me is that both of you, the way in which you have manifested this ability and this need to step out from us versus them mindset, like Amit, you were just speaking about marrying the best of both worlds, the for-profit world and the non-profit world. You very actively balance half of your time as MD of Bain Capital and rest half in numerous service related projects which you are engaged with. So I'm curious, any reflection on that and that how what helps you be in this space of non-duality, if I may call it, that not seeing differences in these spaces and sort of connecting to the essence within and trying to unite these spaces. And I think in many ways, it sort of reflects in Archana's life as well, that she works with communities, which is people, children with intellectual disability, who are one of the most prone and vulnerable communities to be othered. Because as Archana was saying, we never see them in the movie halls, or and they feel so different that it is very likely to see people as abled and disabled. But how do you, what helps you, or what has been your experience around bridging those labels and distinctions.
So, you know, I've always admired, I've actually deeply admired a number of people who have changed the world without virtually any resources, financial resources, with just the power of their ideas, their intellect, their rhetoric, starting with Guru Nanak, whose teachings I'm a big fan of, Mahatma Gandhi, because of whom all of us sit and enjoy our independence, people like Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, so many people who we realized had virtually no resources and who built powerful movements which have had deep influence, you know, Dalai Lama, my Facebook profile is with him, right? I realize I have always been very acutely aware of my limitations as a human being. And I know that I'm not one of them. I don't have the power of ideas, rhetoric. And so, but what I do have is the power of connections, and I do have the power of capital. When I wanted to move full-time to the social sector, there was a time when I wanted to do that. The person on my left asked me a very blunt question. She told me, what makes you think your time is more valuable to the sector than all your money and your connections? And it hurt me to hear that question being posed to me. I thought, like, you know, I would basically be able to go and make this deep impact sitting on boards, working with social entrepreneurs. And I thought I'd done whatever I needed to do in the corporate world. So it hurt hearing that question. But I went and actually thought hard about it. And I thought about my limitations, and I came to the conclusion that she was right, that I wasn't like these people I greatly admired, that I would drive big social change by just what they were blessed with. And that it made sense for me to remain being anchored in the corporate sector and do what I could with some of what I was blessed with. Yet I didn't want to be disconnected from the social sector. By God's grace, I found an amazing partnership called Bain Capital, which encouraged that. I mean, I was truly, truly lucky that that fell into my lap. Not many companies would, partnerships would allow you to do that. You know, sometimes you're just really lucky that you find someone. From day one, I told them that I have this interest in the social sector. And they said, yeah, no problem. Many of our partners do it. You do it. In fact, you know, we'll encourage you to do it. So from day one, I entered the partnership. They were supportive of letting me spend some time in the social sector. When I entered the partnership, at that point of time, we didn't have much capital, actually. We had, we were still, I'm being probably silly by saying we didn't have much capital. By all Indian standards, we had a lot of capital, but by standards of what we were blessed with in the last 10, 12 years, it's probably the right statement. But we had decided to give away most of what we were going to, if we ever made capital, we had decided we'd give away most of it. And that's what we did. Whatever we have been blessed with during our Bain Capital journey, and I must say, we are so fortunate that helping build Bain Capital has been one of the most joyous things that I've in my life. On the back of, I thought I'd get, everyone gets one shot at a goal, build one great company. I got a chance to. But along with building a great one, when I built DSP Merrill Lynch alongside the Hemendra Bhai, I didn't become wealthy because of that. Well, again, it's relative standards. You know, I was at least able to buy a house by the time I left, but I didn't, wasn't able to see movements and stuff like that. But Bain Capital, you know, we were blessed with wealth. And with that wealth, we were able to do what we've been able to do over the last 12 years. And Archana was absolutely right. It was the most sensible decision that I was able to make. I was able to, unlike running a bank where it's a 24/7 job, here I started, my time was my own. So I was able to spend more and more of my time in the social sector. At some point of time, I was able to groom the second line to take more responsibility and then move to a chairman role over the last 4 years and work half my time in the social sector and start building the foundation team, which we are very, again, blessed to have a good team in the foundation. So it's really a combination of, you know, amazing things that have happened in my life, thanks to provocative questions that people have asked. She said I pushed her in her comfort zone. She's pushed me to think differently about things as well. And that has resulted in greater good for not just me, but for others as well.
Beautiful. Thank you. Archana, any reflections?
I think, Rohit, your question on us versus them, you know, this is again coming from my spiritual school where, you know, we're all taught we're one. From my understanding, we're all one. And therefore, like we began today's session by actually saluting divinity in each one of us, right? So if that's your understanding and that's the lens you're coming from, then there is no us from them, right? We all know that for all of us, this is a journey. We're all at different points in the journey. We cannot do this on our own. We have to do this as a group. We have to do this as all of humanity. And therefore then these just become, you know, opportunities for us to learn, to grow and evolve together. I mean, I even say that, you know, I keep going back to giving you examples of Jared Kale, but, you know, so often the magic of the energy, of the positive energy, of the unconditional love that you feel at Jared Kale, which is also what Sangeeta talked about, that little bit of sunshine, these kids can give it to us. You don't find that magic anywhere and everywhere, right? So we invite our donors, our supporters, anybody who's willing to come, to actually come to the campus, to see these kids, to meet with the kids, to engage with the kids. But it's a two-pronged reason, right? One is, of course, come and see a section of population that is otherwise invisible. But the other is come experience some of this magical energy. Because unless you experience it, you don't even know what you're missing. So from that lens, I think there is no us and them. It's just a question of kind of being there for each other and doing this together.
Beautiful. Thank you. And I just want to remind our audience that unfortunately today our live stream chat window is not working. So you can send in your questions through ask@servicespace.org, which is ask@servicespace.org. And we'll be happy to take some of your questions also if you're able to sneak in an email while listening to this very, very interesting conversation. Thank you so much. Over to you, Sangeeta, for something. from your end.
Thank you. So, Archana, those last words you mentioned about oneness and about really, it just reminded me of this powerful quote that I came across a few years ago, and I was hoping I would get a chance to read it out. And lo, I'm so grateful I have a chance to read it out. It's actually a quote by Leela Watson, the Aboriginal activist, and she says, "If you have come here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound with mine, then let us work together." And I think, I just find it very powerful, and it just has so many messages for all of us who are working in the space of social justice. Just that. And I just wanted to come back to one question about, it's interesting that you mentioned that you're both wired differently and how you constantly hold the mirror up to each other. So I was just wondering, how did these, when you decide as a couple you have the shared dream for a better world, and you decide to write away a significant part of your wealth. I'm just curious, what are the conversations you have with your family, with each other, and how do you take them along? It's your dream, right? But how do you take the others along?
Yeah.
I think this one was, I think we approached it very, very, very differently. And it made for very interesting conversations over a long period of time. I'm a very impulsive person. For me, and this is in some ways it's, you can say it's a fault of mine, or it's a character trait of mine, but I can easily operate in zero or one with lots of things in life. I mean, early on in life, I was, when I was being brought up, I had a, I was very fond of my neighbors. I had a aunt. I used to call them all aunts. I had a next door aunt who was from Ahmedabad, a wonderful Muslim lady. I used to call her Amma, and I used to spend time in her house. She got me to love biryani growing up. My next neighbor was Sardarni. I used to eat chicken in her house. Another neighbor was a Bengali. I learned how to eat fish in her house. I grew up the most hardcore vegetarian that you could find on the planet, in a hardcore vegetarian's house. And then one day in life, something happened and I turned into a strict vegetarian. And in life, actually, I work that way. Once I make up my mind on something, it takes me time sometimes to make up my mind. Sometimes I make up my mind on something. That's how I am. If a book influences me to do something, I decide to do it. If I have strong reasons I decide to do something, I do it. I decided on wealth as well, that the purpose of wealth was essentially to, for the greater good of society. And so I made up my mind on, how I wanted to use it. So I told Archana what I think we should do with the wealth that we were blessed with. And of course, I think our approach to lots of these things starts from me taking a point of view. And just like I previously pointed out, she then puts out a provocative counterpoint. And then we, over time, get to what we think is the right answer. In this case, I think, and often there are other characters involved in our life who mediate and provide their perspective as well. But I think we went through a journey where we asked ourselves the question on what is enough, which was a very important question to ask. And we went through it. I'm a little bit of a nerd. And so we put together spreadsheets to define what was enough. We got Archana's close friend, who's a financial services advisor, involved to define, help her define what is enough. She has a very motherly instinct, which every mother rightfully has, to take care of the family's instinct, define what is enough in case of health emergencies and all kind of other possible scenarios. And so we decided what is enough. And after ensuring that that was secure, we basically decided that we would, you know, that I was free to discharge jointly with her the rest of it freely for societal needs.
Yeah,
is so that accurate?
Yes, that's very fair and very accurate. So I think what you can also see is that it is super fun being a fly in our house, especially when dinner table.
Sure.
I think in this conversation as well, while I was completely conceptually aligned, it was harder for me and took longer for me to actually convert that into a practical execution, right? So for Amit, it was, even now, Amit lives, all his clothes are in a single cupboard, right? And he has consciously made himself, kind of need very little, so to speak, materially. But for me, it was like, yes, I hear you. And conceptually, I'm saying absolutely. But, you know, we do have a child. We do have family. And therefore, I do believe that it is part of our responsibilities to kind of, you know, provide for them basics, whether it's education, whether it's health, whether it's a roof over the head, et cetera, et cetera. So that was one part of it, right, which Amit said. But I have to admit, for me, the other part was, I didn't want to feel guilty the next time I wanted a vacation. Or I didn't want to feel guilty if I wanted, a piece of jewelry. And I hadn't reached that point in my personal journey where I was ready to give it all up. And I kind of put that on the table. And therefore, getting that spreadsheet right took us longer than it should have. But I think the key here, like Amit said, was to keep at it, right? To not shy away from these conversations, to not shy away from things that are important to you. There's no right or wrong. You cannot feel guilty about how you feel today, right? We're all work in progress, like you said, Sangeeta. That's all a journey. And I think being honest and candid and creating those spaces within our relationships to say that is as important as actually making that switch happen, because you can't leave people around you unhappy with your choices. So I think in this, the one part is, you know, this, the financially giving away. But I think again, for us, the second part, the intangible part is also, what kind of a person are we wanting to be, right? So often, people start by saying, I want to be a millionaire, or I want to be the head of a bank, or I want to be a president, I want to be a CEO. And in the quest for doing that, you land up, you know, making wealth or collecting wealth. And then that in itself becomes the objective, because now you want more, you want a second house, you want a second car, et cetera, et cetera. So I think being conscious that that is not the purpose for which you're working, but how are you growing as a human being? Are you being more compassionate? Are you being more generous? Are you being more loving and kind in all your interactions, physical, mental, emotional? I think that is as equal a part in this conversation of giving than just the material. So
Thanks for sharing that. I'm actually curious to also know how, how did you involve your daughter in this discussion? I mean, she is affected by your choices, right? So.
So when we took the decision, she was obviously very young at that point of time, but we decided to do all of this when she was about 4 or 5. And so she didn't have, kind of real sense of what we were doing, but she had a sense that we were obviously very interested in the social sector and she would see what we were doing. And very early on, she started actually getting exposure to the social sector. She would, accompany me. Those days I was chairing Akanksha. She started, occasionally coming with me to Akanksha schools when I would visit. So as a young child, she's done that. Then when she grew up a little bit, she started actually going with Arjuna to Jai Vakil. She's been volunteering there now for a few years. She's even written exams for kids who take the national open school exams. So she's had perspective of, the social sector now for some time. That's got naturally built because of all the exposure that she's had. I think when she was a little older, probably I would say 3 or 4 years ago, she read the letter and she got a sense of, what it all meant. And I think it's, so she now has perspective of all of this independently. And she wants to build her life. She understands what we are talking about. She understands, kids actually have realized that teenagers these days are very different from how we were as teenagers. They are so much more sensitive and aware. And look, the good news is that we live a particular life. She doesn't see flamboyance around her. We've stayed in the same house since her birth. It's a 1600 square foot house. We don't drive flashy cars. We indulge ourselves in good holidays because we love experiences. But she sees a particular lifestyle and she sees what we care about is essentially greater good. And so that shapes her thinking. And I think she accordingly has developed as a sensitive human being.
Thank you. That's so beautiful. Rohit has just messaged me. He wants to ask the next question. So,
yeah, I'm. As I heard this, I just reminded a quote which I love, that values are not taught, but they are rather caught. So I think maybe I don't know how much it is general teenage spirit versus the spirit which you have in your homes. Thank you. And another thing which I'm curious about, Amit and Arjuna, is that again, when we see your life, I think it is so enriching to see the amount of big impact you've been able to have, whether it's first, doing big in terms of professionally, sort of becoming the head of an investment bank at an early age. And now even the kind of social impact you are driving, the kind of change you are able to affect throughout the country, throughout different spaces, through your work. But I think as I read between the lines, as I read more of your journey, I saw that how it was not like a planned one-shot decision that in 5 years, I'm going to create so much impact. But a lot of it was just small decisions taken with the spirit of being the change, and which has sort of not in a totally planned way rippled out to become this huge mega, from ripples to tsunamis of change, if I could call it. So to that, I would like to ask that what has been the role of small ways of kindness, like small acts of kindness or small ways of showing up or small ways of just being the change in your life? And is that still relevant now in your life when you find yourselves in a place where you have so many strategic levers and you can do so many big things, which is so amazing. But what is the role of, is there a role of small acts in your life even today? Or any stories which come up, that's also, I think, great.
Yeah, you know, Rohit, I personally believe that there can be no, there can be no discontinuity between a small act and a big act. You cannot aim for the big things unless you do many small things. Actually, the many small that ultimately weave into a big thing. You cannot have big, huge, so, you know, programs unless you have, at the end of the day, you know, kindness in your heart. You know, we cannot basically function in one way in one facet of our life and another way in another facet of our life. So I think kindness has to be something that we exhibit every facet of our life. I personally, for example, this disturbs me, Archana knows this. I hate it if anybody raises their voice. Even in jest, I mean, you know, if family members basically, you know, just scream at each other, I don't like it, you know. So I'm, you know, these things, and they, that disturbs me, it throws me in a funk for some period of time, and it takes me time to then get out of that funk. So I personally believe that. I mean, and I have seen that people who I really admire, I've seen how they, really big people, you know, how they, this is wired into their DNA. So a good example of this for me was, you know, I've had the privilege of meeting the Dalai Lama a few times. And I remember one time that Archana and I met him thanks to two good friends of ours, Amrita and Samir Sumaya. They had organized, this beautiful picture of one of our meetings with him. And I think this is, you know, this is actually the third time probably.
Wow.
I think this was at the Tata Institute of Social Sciences. But the meeting before this was, he was teaching at the Sumaya Vidya Vihar. And after his lecture, he came over to Kitab Khana to give a talk to a small group of us. And after the talk, he was coming down. It was, I distinctly remember, it was a Sunday morning. So the Flora Fountain was completely empty. And nobody really knew he was coming. It was not a public event. And so it was completely empty. And so he was walking down. He was not walking down. He was coming down the elevator. And so I came down before him. And I was waiting next to his protocol car. And a small crowd had gathered. They said the offices were all closed, so not many people knew that he was there. A small crowd had gathered to say goodbye to him. And he, it was between Kitab Khana and his car, there was about 10 steps. So he was slowly treading those 10 steps. And I noticed that there was a old beggar woman in, must have been in her 80s, who was about 200 meters away in the parking lot. There's lots of beggars who stay in that parking lot. And she must have realized that there's a holy man who's basically visiting, because she saw the crowd. So she just wanted to get the blessings of this holy man. The word had spread around. So she saw this person descend from the exit of Kitab Khana. So she started making a dash for him. And he was walking to his car, and she had to beat him from her sprint of 200 meters and his steps of 10 steps. And of course, everyone was trying to rush him into his car. And he, needless to say, made it to his car before her 200 meter sprint. But from the corner of his eye, he saw this, you know, woman in tattered clothes running towards his car. And while he was being rushed into his car, he stopped everybody and he got down and took a few steps and he went and he hugged that woman and he sought her blessings. It's a scene I've never forgotten in my life.
Wow. Wow. Actually, so instead of actually giving blessings, you're saying that he, Dalai Lama, was seeking her blessings. Wow, that's quite amazing and counterintuitive, Amit. I think sort of the question it brings up me is that what learnings this sort of incident can have for us as designers of social change, as people who work with people whom we think who have nothing and who we want to work with and improve their lives. Anyway, I don't think we'll go into that question, but since just because we have you guys on the call and it would just be quite unjust to not have a conversation on have some little bit conversation on the topic of money that, I think you have for a long time been giving your money very generously for various social causes. And we know that money is a very critical resource, which is needed for our survival. But at the same time, I'm also hearing you say that that you have come across situations and people where they have created amazing social change without actually utilizing any money. So if you are speaking for any young social entrepreneur, what would you be your advice, Amit and Archana, for engaging with money? That what should be the role of money when if there's a young person and who is really passionate about creating a difference in the world? What should be their relationship with money?
Mine is a fairly simple perspective. So, you know, Anika, one day, a couple of years ago, I still remember. So I have been volunteering at Jai Vakil for the last 10, 12 years, right? And I'm not at all, so I've been volunteering, which basically means I get no salary, right? And I think the first couple of months when I got, so it was a choice that we made. It was a choice that I was fully in agreement with. But the reality is for the first few months when no salary check was hitting my account, I think at some bizarre level, it was a hit to myself, right? And I realized how much we measure our own self-esteem by the amount of salary we make or money in the bank, right? That was a big aha moment for me. It was so tempting for me to just go and either ask for money or get another money, a job where I would get some money. And for, I swear, I was hounded by the fact that I made no money, right? At some level, I was gone, I'm dependent, oh God, I'm this and I'm that and whatever. So again, that was one fun dining table conversation. Long story short, it was a journey. I had to come to terms with the fact that my self-esteem or my self-worth was not, or my self-confidence was not dependent on the money in the bank, etc. But I realized how important as a factor that is as well, right? So I remember a couple of years ago, you know, when Amit was talking to Anika and she said, I want to grow up and be like mama and, you know, work in a not-for-profit and it's not about the money and this, that, and the other. I consciously sat her down and said, it is about the money. You have to learn to fend for yourself. You have to be able to look after yourself and all your needs. That is not negotiable because we're not providing it. You've read that letter. And I said, even when I was growing up, my parents made very sure that I knew how to do everything, right? Whether it was cooking, driving a car, having a job, making enough money to support yourself, having a skill set that enables you to do that. Then as life, you know, happens, you can make the choices that you want to and need to, but you have to be equipped to. So I think cannot stress the need enough in terms of equipping yourself with a skill set, with the professional degrees and experience in order to kind of provide for that. Having said that, I think just that is not enough. And there are various other factors at play. So even, for example, at Jairakil, you know, some of the work that we're able to do is thanks to our really large volunteer base. 33% of our senior management today is voluntary. That does not mean we're compromising on skill sets or caliber. It's just a place where people are choosing to give of themselves freely, and we're welcoming it, and the whole space is benefiting from it. So I think from my perspective, there is a very, very important role that money has to play, and we shouldn't take away from that. And I think the best impact can be made when you marry that with you know, doing things from the heart and doing it for the right set of reasons. So I think that's really what I would come from.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I would probably agree with all of that. I think the challenge in my mind really lies with people not defining what is really enough. I think if you don't define what is enough, then I think you get onto a endless kind of a treadmill, and you, which is kind of, you know, driven by greed, and then that lands up being very unproductive. Whereas if you kind of have clarity mentally, if you have clarity mentally about that answer, then a lot of things start falling in place. I think the second thing is that if you are indeed capable of generating wealth, and you feel that that's your blessing, then you should do that. But I think you should do it with a sense of purpose. The purpose should not be, in my mind, and I think each person has to answer this for themselves, but I think if you do it with a sense of purpose, and that purpose is for sake of greater good, then I think there's some nobility to that wealth creation. I think where lots of people land up losing their way is when that wealth creation is for, you know, the wrong set of reasons.
Wonderful. Sangeeta, do you have a quick final question before we move to close?
Yeah, I actually have a bunch of questions, but I'm mindful that we only have, I think we have no time left. But if we were to just, since we've said at the beginning that it's all work in progress, and I would really like to hear from you. I think all of us would like to hear from you in brief about where are you headed next? What's that one thing where you're going next from where we are now?
I think for me, it's about striking a better balance in my life. I absolutely love what I do in terms of my work. But I do also play many, very many other roles in my life, right? From wife, mother, daughter, mother-in-law, homemaker, friend, etc. And I have my spiritual practice, which I would like to do more of. But you know, I still have my moments where between a meeting and a dinner engagement, I sit for meditation. So I get it done. But it's not the shape form that I'd like to do. So I think And I've been having this very active dialogue with Amit is, how do we create, at least I create a little bit more balance in it. I want that time to myself. I want to be able to not do my meditation as an activity, but as a more mindful, dream out space. To me, the balance is really do more at the foundation, both as which is Aditi Chandra Foundation as well as Jayapati, but find more time for a bit of balance, if I may.
Yeah, you know, I think for me it is two things. I think we have personally, I feel I've done a B minus job in the social sector. A few good institutions have been seeded, given their has got to the level that it's got. Ashoka University is where it is. And a few NGOs have done well. But no real problems have been solved. I look around me and I still see a lot of problems. I think I would feel satisfied only if, as a team at the foundation, we feel we have solved problems for, in a country of 1.3 billion people, if at least we are able to solve problems for, 5% of those facing deprivation, if we're able to solve problems for that over the next 10 or 15 years, then I think we can, we've achieved at least something. Can we put our minds to being a part of a collaborative movement where we're able to achieve that? I think we have a lot of work to do in that. We can choose our spots. We are trying to do that in work in rural development. We're trying to do that in social sector capacity building. I think there's a lot to do to take us from B minus to N grade and A. Personally, I think there's a lot of work I need to do on myself. I think I've not spent any time with myself meaningfully. I've just been so busy, building organizations all my life that I've had no meaningful time for myself. I want to create that time in the years ahead if I have the opportunity. So I'm hoping that happens.
Thank you so much, Amit and Archana, for those lovely, generous sharings. I can clearly see from what you shared that how for the last many years your life is in a beautiful upward spiral where you keep effortlessly and seamlessly dancing between I think giving to others and also discovering yourself and finding that balance in between. And in that process, you have inspired so many people and created so much change. And with the humility which you hold it, and in so many ways, redefining the notions of a life of success, a life of meaning, and a life of richness. Thank you so much. I apologize for being a few minutes off. And I was just told that we have, I think Guru Nanak himself is blessing this day today. So we have another volunteer, Kinnari, who is going to just joined us to offer a few lines of another beautiful Shabad. And thank you, Kinnari, for showing up. Over to you. And so it's that offering, and then we'll close with a few moments of silence.
एकंकार सतनाम करता पुरख निर्भव निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजूनी सैभम गुर प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक हो से भी सच सोचे सोच न हो वही जे सोचे लखवार चुप्पे चुप न हो वही जे लाई रहा लखदार भुखिया भुख न उतरी जे बन्ना पुरिया पार सहस्यान पालक वो है ता एक न चले नार कि विसचिया रा हुई किव कूड़े तुटे पार हुकम रजाई चलना नानक लिखिया ना
Thank you. That is wonderful.
Thank you so much. Just a few moments of silence and we'll close our call.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.